You're listening to the Be Red Podcast with your hosts, Ryan Hackman and Giancarlo Campos.
Hey, what's up to all our listeners out there and all our loyal redheads? My name is Giancarlo Campos, and you're listening to episode number 6 of the Be Red Podcast, where we talk about the Chicago Bulls, the NBA, and all things associated with our favorite league. Alongside me is my co-host, Ryan Hackman. You can find him on Twitter at J23SNKRHead. And you can find me at KingJ_89. Although there is no NBA yet, we're still out here getting our jump shots in. We have another jam-packed show for you today. On this episode, we'll be talking about the validity of this season and Giannis's thoughts on it, how referees are being affected by COVID, Kobe White's ceiling and a former player's thoughts about it, and finally, that clown that the Bulls are employing, Jim Boylan. Ryan, my guy, go ahead and kick it off for us.
Yes. Here, I'm going to share the screen to talk about the NBA should be embraced no matter the uncertainty ahead. Shaquille O'Neal said back in late May that the NBA should just scrap the season, start fresh in October like it's normally the case. But is that realistically possible with an incomplete season? Most teams have played 65 games, but did you really think that when he said that, that was going to be a dominating opinion that was going to prevail at the end of the day?
Yeah, so the question is, do you think Shaquille O'Neal's comments back in May about just scrapping the season, do you think we should have done that? Do you think the NBA should have gone with that? If I'm being honest with you, I think the NBA wasn't prepared for something like this. I think had they been prepared, they would be in a financial position where the owners and players would be okay. They'd be receiving money. And, you know, they would have, like, the insurance policies in place for something like this. And because they don't have those things, I feel like scrapping it is just not an option that they have. I feel like it's something that they have to have the season. They have to crown a champion. They have to – you know, a lot of these players are really poor at managing their money. A lot of these owners need the extra money. I mean, they don't need it. They're even more rich than the players, but you know, they want it, you know? And I honestly don't think that scrapping the season is something that they want to do. I think they want some more checks.
Well, that's absolutely true. I think if it came to a last ditch effort, like MLB was coming to, then possibly scrapping the season would be an option. But fans, they want to see these players show off their talent. And then to wait more than 6 months in between playing games, you think about when the NBA season ends in usually mid to late June, the regular season the following year starts in mid to late October. So there's a four-month gap. Now you add 2 months in between that gap, the fans are bored. The diehard fans who go out there wear their LeBron James jerseys or wear their Kawhi Leonard jerseys, they are bored. And guess what? The players are even more rusty to a point where it's going to be harder for them to get adjusted to. So I think the NBA was in a situation where we were all caught off guard, but there's no option but to bring the NBA back just because these players, it's all about creature havoc. There's habits that they get involved, that they get used to. And for this to stop the habits, it could interrupt their effectiveness. And being out not on the court for 6 months, a few of these teams, like the Bulls, will not be on the court for almost 9 months when all is said and done. That's really a big part of it, just being in shape. And there's no substitute for not playing on the court. There's absolutely no substitute for that. And you can play all the scrimmage games you want, but the live games, there's no alternative to live NBA action. And these guys do age after a while. It's not like a pandemic's going to keep them at a certain age. If you look at certain players who are – by 34, 35, that it does catch up to them after a while, and one season off can really hurt their timing.
So let's get back to the play at large. Like, what would be the reasoning that they want to cancel the season? It's for health, the health of the players, the safety of the players. If one player dies, it was a failure. Okay, that's it. If one league member dies, one staff member, one coach dies, it was a failure. That's it.
Yeah.
Now the reason to do it, let's call it what it is. It's a capitalist mindset. It's these private owners that want more money. That's it. You know, let's call it what it is. That's really what's going on here. Can you blame them? No. It's also, a large opportunity for the NBA to elevate their game. There are no sports right now. Like, maybe there's soccer, but there are no sports right now. And if the NBA can pounce on this time right now, I think it would elevate the league. It would elevate the game because people are rabid right now. People are dying to be able to watch anything. And if they're able to watch the NBA, and the NBA takes center stage and, is at the top of the ladder, what better way to grow your game than to be the only sport that's being televised and to put a great product out there like the NBA has? It's a world game. So, it would be a huge opportunity for them to come back and capitalize on this time right now.
And especially people, I personally believe that one of the remedies to dealing with stress or stuff like that in life is sports. You get a chance to just sit back, go to games in normal times, and just be able to watch the game and just relax from all the issues that you may be dealing with. And I think it's something that it's a soother. It soothes people's feelings, just makes them feel like life is good, especially in these tumultuous times. Yep. Sports is a unifying force that brings people together, regardless of views on religion or politics or any of that stuff. And being without live sports for 4 months is a big is a big loss. It really. It affects people's minds, psyche, and just be able to watch sports is just...
It's an escape. It's
escape big week. It really is. Moving on, I want to talk about Giannis Antetokounmpo. Hard to pronounce his name. I apologize for that, but he said a few weeks ago, quote, "This is going to be the toughest championship you could ever win." What do you think he's basing that off of?
Yeah, so I could answer that really simply. The guys have not been training like they were. They're going to go right into a heavy season and play at the top level again right away for a championship. So, some of these guys fell out of shape. Some of these guys are in better shape. A lot of things like that. I think that's one of the things he's talking about. He's also talking about the potential vulnerability that these teams have, that these players have. The opportunity is definitely there for somebody to get sick, in the playoffs and to miss games. And, one could only imagine if the Lakers are going and then Anthony Davis gets sick. That completely shifts the power, completely shifts the way that everything would play out. So that's what Giannis is talking about. At least that's what I think he's talking about. What do you think he's talking about?
Reading a quote in this story, we were kind of hard to beat at home. We have unbelievable fans that support us every night. Not being able to have them out there, I think that's going to hurt a little bit. Mm-hmm. And playing in a neutral facility, in a neutral site where you may be the home team, but it's even the teams that are on are classified as a road team and home team, it's not really a road or home game for either one. It's a neutral site game, and playing on your home court really makes a difference, such as at the Fizzer Forum with the Bucks play. The Bucks are one of the best teams when it comes to home records in the NBA, and not be able to have those fans behind you cheering them on really can be a motivational factor that is just simply not there due to obvious reasons. That I think that's a big part, having the fans behind you in a 20,000 capacity stadium.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, so it sounds like what he's talking about is more from a psychological standpoint. I think what he's talking about then is that from the player's perspective, it's just going to be a change of pace. It's just going to be more difficult to play in these empty arenas when you know you're playing for something, but you can't hear the fans. So psychologically, you got to psych yourself up for it. So yeah, I mean, I could see that too. I'm in agreement with him with that.
And just these guys are not used to playing in general, whether it's basketball, football, baseball, hockey. They're not used to playing either in front of no fans or in some cases 20 to 25% capacity. Having that sold out crowd really pumps you up and helps elevate your game to a new level. And that's going to be a little different without the fans. Hopefully that changes soon. We'll have to see. That's another topic for another day. But ideally, if we can have fans in the stands in not too distant future, that's ideal, because that's what makes the NBA great, is that the 20,000 fans standing as one.
Yeah.
We alluded to potential championships with asterisks after them. Tom Haberstraw of NBCSports.com has a long list of NBA championships with asterisks. They even go back to the mid-1980s, such as, I'm not going to go back to all of them, it would be too long, but the 2019 NBA champion Toronto Raptors. They won it because, in part, Kevin Durant and Klay Thompson got injured in Game 5 and Game 6 of the NBA Finals. My question to you is that really – could you call that an asterisk? Because
– yes.
Because imagine if one of the players on Toronto, Kawhi Leonard, Pascal Siakam, imagine one of them got injured, and that helped propel the Warriors to winning a championship as well. So goes both ways.
Let me jump in here. So one thing is injured, and another thing is COVID. Way different. If a guy tears his ACL, no asterisk. If it happens in the season, it happens. It happened to Derrick Rose here in Chicago, and, you know, when I thought we had a chance to win it all. And is there an asterisk on that season for me? No. But another thing is, if a guy gets sick and gets COVID, let's say they're in the finals and Giannis comes down with COVID. Asterisk. That's not fair. You know, it's something that he couldn't control, something he couldn't control. I mean, you can't control tearing an ACL. I get that. But COVID is completely different. It's something that is – it's not like an ACL tear. It's not like a meniscus tear. It's not like an ankle sprain. COVID is completely different. You know, the guy got sick. The guy can't play. You know, you heard about Jordan playing through the flu or, you know, bad pizza, whatever it was. You can play through certain things. You can play through a sprained ankle. You can do certain things. They're not going to let him play through COVID. And yeah, there's an asterisk simply because of everything that's happened, simply because of the layoff that the players have had so far. And also because, you know, of all the different circumstances. They're playing in Orlando. They're not playing on their home court. And the game's changed right now for this season. And because of that, it's not a regular season to me.
And you mentioned with the flu, it could be a difference between life or death. You mentioned the MJ flu game back in the late 90s, and if any players get this disease, it could definitely have an impact on who wins a championship. It could help the other team, the underdog, win the championship.
Yep.
There's a good point there, and you can't – to me, for instance, when – some injuries are controllable. Some, like injuries, you mentioned MCL, ACL, hamstring. Sometimes these injuries happen as a byproduct of maybe being a little too aggressive, and sometimes it's just a freak accident, in quotes, that just happens. And even to the best of players, some of these freak accidents happen. They turn out to be hamstring injuries. There are certain injuries you can control, and there are certain injuries you can't. And also, with the virus, just being safe from one another, distancing yourself from other people, not getting too close to each other. In some ways, it's controllable. In some ways, it's not. It depends on the situation, if you ask me, because, yeah, injuries are part of the game. That's how it goes in any sport, but it can go both ways depending on the situation.
I think you said it best. I think you said an ACL tear, an MCL tear, an ankle sprain, you know, a broken hand, whatever it may be, that's not life or death. You come back from that. COVID, people die. you could die. So that's the difference.
Yeah, it obviously depends on how severe the symptoms are, and not to get into discussion about how the virus goes, but generally speaking, the younger people who have been getting it a little more recently are more likely to overcome it, but not to say they can't pass away. It can happen. So it depends on the situation. And moving on, we talk about the players in the NBA and what life is like, but we don't all often talk about the referees, the three referees on the court who are having to run back and forth many times in a 48-minute game or even more. How do you think this is going to change the perspective from the referees?
So the segue here would be to say, hey, you know, players could die. And like you said, you know, the likelihood is that they won't, because they're young, healthy athletes, you know, well-conditioned, good shape. You know, and also in good shape is the referees, but they're not young anymore. Their immune system is different. You know, some of them might have compromised immune systems. You don't know. And you know, just, you know, people that we never really talk about are the referees. And in conjunction with that are the people that work there, you know, the staff members, the coaches, you know, things like that. How will COVID affect them? And it's going to be really interesting to see how everything's going to play out. Now, they've talked about the NBA bubble, and it's supposed to be a quarantine, closed off section. And in that section is going to be the referees, is going to be the coaches, is going to be the players. And these people are getting tested regularly. So if they don't have it and no one brings it in, then hypothetically speaking, everything should be fine. But you never know. All it takes is one person to be infected and to pass it on. And God forbid, you know, something happens to one of the referees, you know, it'll change definitely, you know, it'll probably shut everything down. Let's call it what it is. It'll probably shut everything down.
I don't have a list of all the referees in the NBA by name. I have noticed over the last few years that there's a new generation of referees. A lot of the referees we saw back in 1990s and the early 2000s, a lot of them, some of them that are known by name, a lot of them have retired, and there's a new generation of referees, and they're obviously trained a little differently when it comes to calling fouls. So there's a mix between more veteran referees who are on the verge of retirement, and there's a lot of referees I've noticed that are relatively new to the game, have been promoted to the game. It's not to say that they can't be infected, but I know they're taking the precautions extremely seriously, not just among the players, but among the referees. I just want to read a quote. Our referees are the pros, and they're going to come here ready to work, said Mike McCutchen, the NBA vice president and head of referee and development and training. From the mental side, we never took any time off, quite frankly. What do you make of that? That's a little – that kind of stands out to me. We didn't take any mental time off, even 4 months without any games.
It sounds like he's saying like they're ready. Yeah, he's saying that they're ready. They're ready to go. They're ready to collect some checks is what I'm hearing. That's what it sounds like. I think what he's saying is they've been watching film. They're preparing for it. You know, they're pros. They're constant professionals in the same way that the players are. And, you know, I would agree with that. I like the NBA refs. You know, there's questionable calls that the naked eye misses from time to time. But, yeah, you know, I think that's all it means.
How do you think that these games without any fans, how do you think the referees are going to go about it, especially if there's outbursts from players and coaches, because you hear a lot about them, but it's harder to hear them when there's 20,000 people in the crowd.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting to see. You're going to really, you know what, honestly, it's good for the NBA and it's good for players' brands. Okay. Let me give you a different angle. Seeing the way that Russell Westbrook is going to react to things, and hearing what he's going to say is going to either make you like him even more or make you like him even less. I don't think there's an in-between.
No.
You're going to really see players' personalities, and you're going to really learn the inner workings of an NBA team. You know, when the point guard yells at the 7'2" big man, hey, get your ass over here, blah, blah, blah. You know, you're going to learn all those things because now you're going to be able to hear it. And when they don't do what they're supposed to do, you're going to hear the coaches on the sides yelling. You know, it's going to be really interesting to see, you know, those interactions and just kind of how the players get along with each other and hear those conversations, because you're really going to be able to hear those conversations. What do you think is going to happen? Do you think there's going to be any? Do you think there's going to be more technicals or not? Just because you can.
That was the next question I was going to ask is, if we see any of these outbursts happen, like you do from time to time, do you see more technical fouls being called? Because to me, absolutely no doubt, because fans don't want to watch games where they hear players yelling F you to a player on the other team. I think referees are going to have to be more inclined to call technical fouls, especially when players use this foul language. Even though technically speaking, the rules of the referees are supposed to players issue technical fouls anytime they basically use swear words. But the thing is, these guys use swear words all the time. They use it all the time. But the difference is there's going to be no fans watching, and there's the crowd noise is not going to be there. And I think that they're going to have to call more technical fouls, because it's going to hurt the brand if they just let it go without anything happening.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. I think that it'll hurt the brand of the NBA, which is a family game. It'll hurt the players' brand, so the NBA is going to want to protect them. Because, you know, they have marketing deals. But I also think that it could help. I really do. You know, being able to hear Russell Westbrook just go off and how ferocious he is. Or being able to hear, you know, guys like, you know, like Tim Duncan used to give, like, the best advice mid-game to players, you know. Or being able to hear what Steve Kerr would say to some of his players. Being able to hear those conversations, I think, is super big. You know, one of the things that came out of, like, the XFL, which died already, you know, one of the things that came out of that is being able to hear the interactions between players. You would have them mic'd, and you could hear the conversations that they would have along the sidelines. And I thought that was one of the cooler things. I'm really big into wanting to hear what they're saying, whether curse words or not. You know, I want to hear it. I want to be as in it as I can. So I'm going to be looking forward to it. I know that's for sure.
Do you think that players are going to actually adjust to knowing the fact that there's not going to be fans and you got to be careful what you say? Do you think these players are going to actually do that? Do you think they're not going to be using these swear words as often?
Yeah, I think so. I think they're going to – man, I honestly think they'll be fine. These are guys that are professionals. They'll be fine. It's going to be the initial weekend of games. You know, after one or two games, then they'll have their wits about them. Or maybe the NBA mutes, you know, the sound. I don't know what they're going to do. I'm not sure how they're going to hold it.
I remember
maybe
watching –
pump in 2K sound. Didn't they say they were going to do that? They were going to pump in 2K crowd noises?
I remember after an NBA game in early November between the Lakers and the Mavericks, a microphone caught LeBron James calling St. Luka Doncic, "You're a bad MF-er." And to me, you remember that.
That's awesome.
You remember that. Do you think that stuff is – what do you think would happen if a moment like that
– That's dope. I think it's so dope. I think NBA Twitter would have a field day with that. I think they'd love that stuff. I like when other players empower other players, but I also come from that 90s brand of basketball where I want to hear, you know, two guys talking trash to each other. I got to hear it. I want that. That fuels me. Like that, whew, I got to hear that.
It's
the curse words. They better not be like, you know, the F word where you're calling somebody who is, you know, like the homophobic slurs, you know. It's those words that I'm worried about, because that will really hurt a player if they get caught saying certain words like that. If you drop an F-bomb, you know, or an S-bomb, whatever, you know, not the end of the world. You're, you know, playing at the highest level, super competitive, things happen in the heat of the moment. But you call somebody a certain word that you shouldn't, oh, man, that's going to be bad.
I wonder how with these broadcasts, how it's gonna, because you watch these broadcasts during normal times, and you'll hear occasionally an NBA player yell the F word and it gets caught on mic, but there's fans involved. But I wonder how the broadcasts are gonna handle this with no fans, but still the possibility of someone yelling an F-bomb that is caught on an open mic.
Yeah, I don't know how it's going to go down, honestly. It's going to be, and it's going to be crazy interesting, honestly, on so many levels, on so many levels. I can't wait.
I can't wait either. Just to see what the sports, how they adapt to a time where that has caught everyone off guard. Everyone, I don't think anyone expected the season to be stopped like from literally as fast as it did. And it'll be interesting to see how they adjust to it, because this is usually their off season. This is their off season where they're getting ready for next season, and the season's gonna go until mid-October, October 12th, I believe. That's around the time when this new NBA season starts, and then new NBA season is set to begin around December, around shortly after Thanksgiving. So the routine has been thrown off. That's just simply the way how to put it. The routine has been thrown off. They are creatures of havoc. They're just as simple as it is. I wanted to mention briefly the NBA announced yesterday that the individual awards such as the MVP race is over, and these games will have no impact on who wins the MVP or Rookie of the Year or any of that stuff. Does that come as a surprise to you, or do you think that these games, these remaining 16, 17 games, should actually be included because most of the season has been played?
You know, that's a good question. I'm not. I think that the winners of those races should already be determined for the most part. Like the Rookie of the Year is the Rookie of the Year. We all know.
Yeah, I think Rookie of the Year is Ja Morant.
Ja Morant. Yeah, I think he willed the team to the playoffs. So you know,
he's disgusting. He's filthy on the court. He really showboats a lot, but he's got.
I love that.
Insane hops. He can jump like no man can think of. Like, he's not the tallest guy on the court, but he can still excel to the rim. He nearly ended NBA Kevin Love's career with an incredible dunk that he missed, unfortunately. But he's definitely going to be Rookie of the Year. I don't think they should have any impact because most of the season's been played. It's not like half of the season. It's only 40 games that have been played.
I think that those races should be over. They shouldn't like use this new like COVID bubble basketball to determine who wins those awards. Because that, like we said, it's an asterisk. Even the NBA is saying asterisk. That's kind of what they're saying. Like, we've already deemed who the winners are of these awards. We're not going to let the way this COVID NBA will affect it, because you're not playing all the teams anymore. Now you're playing just, you know, the potential playoff teams, you know, or this 22 league. You know, this new 22 teams that you're playing. So.
Team bubbles, or whatever you call it. It's 20. Yeah, there's 8 NBA teams that are not going to be playing. And speaking of that, one of those teams are the Chicago Bulls. Obviously, we don't have to explain why, but what we're going to talk about when it comes to Bulls is Coby White's season, and former NBA player Kendrick Perkins believes that Coby White's potential has been held back, despite the fact that he's averaged over 13 points a game, 3.5 rebounds, and nearly 3 assists per game. Do you think that Kendrick Perkins has something as a point to make when it comes to that?
Do I think that Boylan has held Coby White back?
Yes.
Yes, I do. But I don't think in this case that was a problem. In this case, I think it was a problem with Lauri Markkanen, and we can get into that in a little bit. With Coby White, I don't think it's a problem. The guy came to the league at 19. What do you want to get him? Like, what do you want him to do? I think he neutered him a little bit, but I don't think he ruined him. Okay, I don't think he ruined him. I think he's ruining Lauri Markkanen. That's what I think. I think Coby White, you know, you give him the reins a little bit. You say, hey, you know, here's, you know, you loosen him a little bit. You're like, hey, go ahead. This is what you can do. You don't want to just throw him in there and feed him to the Wolves right away. You know, they didn't start him right off the bat. They already had some position, you know, some players in place. They already had Sato in place. You know, they could have LaVine play at the point a bit. You know, Shaq, Harrison, you know, they had some guys that they could use. And you let Kobe learn the way. You let him take after some of these guys, learn how to work out, put on some weight, learn the NBA sleeping schedule, which is huge. We don't talk about that enough. Nope. Learn the NBA regimen. You know, learn, you know, what it is to be a pro. And then after, and only after he starts doing those things, you say, okay, now let's see you play. It's okay.
Uh-huh. I think even with Boylan holding him back, I still think he's performed better than I expected. I wasn't sure what to expect from him because he starts in the NBA at 19, goes from college basketball 1 year to the NBA, and you just never know what to expect from a guy who's just 19. And it was just I'm more than surprised. I'm pleasantly surprised of the season that he put up. He exceeded my expectations, especially there was times where he was hitting three-pointers left and right. It was like basically every time he shot a three-pointer, bam, bang, goes to dynamite, boom, goes to dynamite. It just, he overperformed even in spite of the coaching issues that have bogged the Bulls down. I think yes. he's overperformed, to be quite honest.
I agree. He overperformed what was asked of him, which wasn't much. They asked him to come out and be a scorer. That was it. Prove to us that you can go out there and score. And mm-hmm. He did it. He looks like he could be a guy that averages 15 to 18 a game easily. Yes. I was comparing him to Lou Williams just from the role they were giving him. Now, do I want them to have him come into being a point guard next year? Yeah, I want to see it. I want to see if he can do it, because if they found their point guard in Coby White, I think that's huge for the team. Monstrous. That changes, you know, the whole perception of what they're going to do in the draft in the future years, what they're looking for, how the other pieces fit in. If they want him to just be a scorer, then you have another guy in Zach LaVine that can do that. So it's kind of a conflict, you know. I honestly don't think Boylan did that bad of a job as far as asking what they wanted him to do and creating those expectations. Pretty much it was, hey, go out there and score. Prove to me you can score. That's it. And he did that.
Let me follow up with this. Do you see Coby White being a starter? He started one game this year at 65. Do you see him being in the starting rotation a little more often?
It depends who they have at point guard. That's what it comes down to. I don't know. I think Boylan kind of hurt Satoransky. I thought Satoransky was going to be a bigger cog in this offense than he really was. It seemed like he started to understand how to play in the system. If they even have a system, to be honest with you, because from the quotes that I've read, I don't even know if they even have a system. Some of the things that some of the players have said about Boylan have been, you know, an indictment on his coaching. You know, it haven't been the nicest things, that's for sure. It seemed like Satoransky started to get kind of what was expected of him, or kind of started to understand where he fits kind of at the end of the year, last 10 games probably. I thought he was going to be a lot better than he was. I think Boylan, if I'm being honest with you, I think what Boylan did was ruin the team as a whole. Kobe got lucky because all they asked him to do was one thing, you know, whereas other players, not so much. You know, guys like Markkanen didn't know where to go, what to do. Should I play back to the basket? Should I be a facilitator? Should I just shoot?
Well, also, I think when it comes to marketing, I think one of the things that dogged him was his lack of aggressiveness. He's a 7-footer. He can shoot from the 3-point line. He can also be an inside guy that can be a mismatch for other small forwards and in guards. He was just not aggressive enough. He did not take advantage of what was there for him. He knows his talent. He's 23. He's been in the league for a couple of years. The league knows him. He should know what he is made of. And I think he kind of dithered away from that. I think his lack of aggressiveness is part of the reason why he took a step backwards this past year. I think that.
So let me give you his quote, okay? Let me give you his quote. This is what he just said about Jim Boylan about 2 months ago, okay? He said, I had 80 touches per game the past two seasons. This season, the touches dropped to 40. Don't get me wrong. I had some plays drawn with me in mind, but it's just different. When I spoke with Jim, we talked about how I should concentrate on getting rebounds and then leading the fast break. But it's just really hard getting 40 defensive rebounds. So essentially what he's saying is, yo, that's not my game. I can do other things. This guy's trying to make me do this, and that's not what I can do. He's taking away my versatility. That's essentially what he's saying. And that's an indictment on Jim Boylan. That's Jim Boylan saying, hey, I want you to get a rebound and run up the court and run the offense.
Well,
this is a seven-footer. Like, what?
Yeah, the touches per game from 80 down to 40, that's a significant drop. That is literally a significant drop. And we add to the fact that the Bulls were in the bottom five in scoring this year, at least in the bottom 10, definitely bottom five, the less touches per game makes it difficult for the – makes it – as a team that is – doesn't have the offense, it hamstrings your offense even more when you're not giving him the ball as often, and you need him to score.
Yeah.
Even Levine has scored a lot of other teams' points because where are they getting the scoring from besides the two? They're not getting much of it.
They weren't using him enough. That's what he's saying. He's saying, hey, you gave me 40 touches, and you want me to go get 40 rebounds so I can get the 80. Nah, that's not how this works. Use me. Use me. You know, I think a lot of it has to also do with how much Zach dominated the ball this year. He dominated the heck out of it. And, you know, for good reason, that's the best player the Bulls have. You know, and there were nights where he willed that team to victories. But you gotta Zach has to learn, you know, his places. Like, he's got to learn when he can go in and when he can. And he's got to learn to use his other teammates, too. He didn't use Laurie enough, I feel like, you know. But that's just me.
Well, yeah, and when you depend on – in some games, Levine scored almost half of the team's points. In some of these games, he scored almost half of the team's points.
Yeah.
And even in some of them, they still didn't win. And just – you need to have at least two or three prolific scorers that can be a dominant force on a consistent basis. And they just don't have that. They simply don't have that. So
we hope you guys enjoyed episode 5 of the B-Red podcast.
Thanks.
Please remember to like, share, and subscribe. You can listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Anchor, and Stitcher. For my partner, Ryan Hackman, my name is Giancarlo Campos, and we'll catch you next time on the next episode of the B-Red podcast.